An interview with Arthur Maxon Smith, Jr. at his home at 214 Southwest Moreland, Los Angeles, California. The date is May 8, 1984, and the interviewer is Ann Andries.
Well, Mr. Smith, I don't know where you were born.
Did you say when or where?
Well, where?
Marshall, Michigan. December 7th, 1897.
Mm-hmm. And why were your parents in Marshall, Michigan?
Because my father was a minister and got a job in the local church there. My mother was there because she was his wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't realize your father had been a minister. I had found a biography of him, and it indicated he had been an educator, and that he had been a writer, an editorial writer.
To whom are you speaking now?
Arthur Maxon Smith.
Okay. I just didn't want you getting mixed up with Paul Jordan Smith.
No.
Okay. What about him, do you want to know?
Yes, I'd like to know about him. In the biography that I read, it said that he attended Pomona College. Was that where he met your mother?
No, he met my mother in before Pomona College was created, when it was called, I think, Pomona High School or Pomona Junior School or something to that effect. And he was a member of the first class that entered Pomona College as freshmen.
Mm.
My mother was also in that class. He went to Pomona. My mother went to Wellesley.
Mm-hmm.
They kept up their acquaintanceship during the summer vacations. And after the graduations, they married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, one feels that in reading some of the things your mother's written, the Derby Days especially, and some of her poetry, I get a feeling of knowing something about her growing up years in the ranchos, and they're marvelous stories about what California was like at the time and what the Bixby family members were like. I believe your grandfather, Llewellyn Bixby, died before you were born, so you would have never known him.
I did not ever know him, no. That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. But
I might add that I was born about a year after he died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then I believe it was Martha Hathaway who helped raise your mother and her sister and brother.
That is correct. She was the she was one of the sisters in the Hathaway family, of whom four of them married Bixby's, two brothers and also one cousin. And my mother was the fourth one to marry my grandfather. It was his second wife. His first wife had died. And after his second wife died, my Aunt Martha was asked to come and help rear the children, which mm-hmm. she did, and I understand that he wanted her to be his third wife, but she intimated that twice was enough, and that so she remained Aunt Martha rather mm-hmm. than grandmother, or
mm-hmm.
step-grandmother, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very well-versed lady, and she lived in Claremont, about three or four blocks from where I lived in Claremont at the grammar school age, and the school, the grammar school I attended one block west of where she lived. And she would occasionally ask me to stop and for dinner, and I was then instructed how one properly cleaned up the kitchen afterwards, which went first, where everything was set. And she also I think she must have been pretty fond of me, because she spent hours reading to me from Hawthorne's tales about this explanation of how the Greek mythology should be read and understood. And I was born, I guess, with a natural curiosity, and I was swore I would not talk about myself, but I'm breaking the rule right now. And I think she was a very fine woman who cared for her family, and also she devoted her life to, I think, I don't know too much about what happened in her early years, but I believe she taught for a while. And it might be interesting, but not particularly noteworthy, that she died of, I believe, cancer, which had affected her brain, and my mother, who was attending her and holding her hand, so to speak, while the recycling occurred, said that she did know all the bad words, and that she was just like the rest of us underneath it all. Now you've exhausted me on Aunt Martha, except she was a great woman, and we all loved her.
Well, was she living in Claremont because your mother was living there, or?
I don't know anything about why she did anything. Mm-hmm. I am not a mind reader. I have found it very useless, frustrating, and usually leads to antagonism if you try to read other people's minds. Another no-no, which I've let slip out.
I thought perhaps your mother might have said said something as to why.
Well, I think that Aunt Martha considered my mother and her brother Llewellyn and her sister Anne as her children. Mm-hmm. She had spent a great part of her major life rearing them from mm-hmm. as small children on, and mm-hmm. They were her family. Mm-hmm. She never married herself, and whether she did it because she wanted to or whether she felt it was her duty to sacrifice her life serving other people, I have no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said that you were living with Claremont, but the biography of your father indicates that he was the president of the OA who prepared for school in Honolulu. So were you living in Hawaii for a while?
Yes, I went there with his wife. I was both born before he went there. I was part of his family. Another matter of fact, at that time, there were two of us, my brother Bradford and I.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he lasted 1 year there. And then we moved back to, I'm not quite sure, the sequence of time. I know he attended the University of Chicago at one time. I just can't offhand recall whether that was before or after
mm-hmm.
We lived in Hawaii. It's immaterial. But,
mm-hmm.
but that's true. And from there he got a job as teaching philosophy, I believe, at Pomona College, left there. We moved up to Berkeley, where he assumed the position of minister, or whatever you wish to call him, in the Unitarian Church.
Mm.
And at that time, he and my mother were divorced. And she married Paul Jordan Smith, who was the substitute Unitarian minister at that time, although he'd been a rather rebellious young radical, I think, before that, and had assumed that... No, I'm not going to assume what he assumed. And... my father subsequently married Alice Giffen, I think, A-G-I-F-F-I-N, whom he had met at Pomona College as one of his students. Mm-hmm. And following that time, he led what I think was... Following that time, he started a hard rock individual uranium mine outside Bakersfield out in the desert there, because that was the war period and uranium was a material which was necessary in the armament technology at that time. That didn't pay off, so he then got the agency in Bakersfield for the White Steamer, which was an automobile which converted steam to electricity to motion power through the rear wheels. That was a very fine car, but it failed. He then went back to Detroit and as an inventor and I tried to promote one of his recent inventions, which was fairly sound, because in those days there were many outdoor toilets and the seats became a little undesirable to sit on, particularly in strange places. And he had taught us to take a folded newspaper and tear out a piece the way these modern sanitary covers are.
Mm-hmm.
And his invention was to make a toilet seat with parallel pieces with rolls of paper, which would spring up and automatically fold down as used. That was, in my opinion, a good idea, but it failed. He then changed his occupation to writing for the Detroit News and became a very good editorial writer and was sent on special assignments all over the world. He went down to South America or Brazil for the Ford Motor Company to write up the production of rubber there. He knew the Fords very well. Another assignment was to come to California and examine the judicial system with respect to the Bar Association and the way attorneys were controlled or not controlled. He had another assignment which took him to what was then the far north. And he went up to Point Barrow, and I don't recall at the moment whether it was in connection with one of the attempts to reach the North Pole or something recent, but at any rate, it was for him an exciting. I strike the exciting. He told me that he was very pleased with the assignment. He also took some trip down into Mexico. I don't know precisely what the assignment was. Somewhere down the line, he ceased being an editorial writer, and he then came out with his wife, Alice Giffen, and with his brother, Will, who was a doctor, went out and staked a mining claim somewhere in Arizona, north, a little north of of old, the old highway, not the new freeway, not too far away from Siloam, in one of those small towns, way out in the desert with his wife. And they lived there for several years, existed there for several years, until he got into an argument with his brother Will, who was his partner, and his wife Alice fell and cut herself severely, so she bled rather profusely, survived, however. He went back and retired to some small town in Michigan, and was in effect supported, I believe, by my brother Bradford, who was at that time living not too far away from him in New York and was very close to him. And well, that's about the end of it. In other words, he lived there until he died at the age of, I think it's 91. Mm-hmm. And it might be of interest to know that he and George Sumner, who was an early dean or something out here, at, or a professor at Pomona College, who was also the same class that my father was, attended. They were invited, and both of them attended a reunion there. I believe the college paid their expenses. I am not sure of that.
So I'm going to be a member of the first class of a college, I would think?
Yes, if you wish me to speak of classes at Pomona College, I will. Some things which have amused me, let's strike that. In those days, the classes had cheers. Each class had its own individual cheer. Mm-hmm. And the class of 94, and I'm repeating things which I... It's a fact I attended some of these reunion meetings and class mm-hmm. gatherings that, being a member of the family, I went to the college performances. And there I heard the class of 94 give their yell, which is roar, roar, I roar, 94. The next one that I remember was the class attended my mother's brother, Llewellyn Bixby. He graduated in 1901. His class yell went something like this. Gila Maca Finn, Ho Pro Nun, Boomeraka Boomeraka, 19-1. And I mistake the recognition call of the Wolves of 1903 was Boomeraka Boomeraka, Bow Bow Bow, Chingalaka Chingalaka, Chow Chow Chow, Boomeraka Chingalaka, Who Are We, Pomona College, 19-3.
Did you attend Pomona College?
No, I attend. No.
Okay. But you went to elementary school and high school, secondary school in Pomona?
No.
Oh. Where did you attend school?
I attended grammar school and at. Do you wish me to go back to kindergarten?
Certainly, if you feel like going back to kindergarten, fine.
I do. I feel I'm there already. I have vague recollections of attending kindergarten in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how, I cannot recall how or why I was there at the time. The next school which I attended and remember clearly is was Claremont Grammar School.
Mm-hmm.
And I also attended the first, I repeated the performance of my father in going from one institution to the next, the first class, and I was a member of the first class of Claremont High School. Mm-hmm. And that high school was held in the old Parsons home, I believe, which was located, I think, on I don't know if it's Indian Hill or something like that, mm-hmm. and about 4th or 5th Street. From there, I went to Berkeley and attended Berkeley High School for, Berkeley High School for 1 year. Miss Randolph's, I believe, private school for a year. Then my Aunt Martha took me back to Concord, Massachusetts, where my auntie, because she lived east of the Mississippi, and my Aunt Avis, who lived west of this city, Mrs. Llewellyn Bixby. Complete blank there. I know I must have gone to school. The only school I remember there was the dancing school where I learned to sort of fumble through the three-step with other young students. Then back to Berkeley where I graduated from Berkeley High School, and from there to Dartmouth College, which I entered in 1915, and from which I graduated in 1924. From there, the educational process took me to Harvard Law School, entering in 1925, graduating in 1929. My education continued when I came to Los Angeles and joined the law firm of O'Melveny and Myers. One, because Mr. O'Melveny was the family lawyer and he had a law office, and two, because I had made grades which were sufficient to which I stayed with for until December 19. December 31, 1934, at which time my education continued in being a sole practitioner for the next 50 years until I retired in December 31, 1980 or 1981,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is still continuing.
Do you have an office that you go to at all?
I would show you. No, I am not a practitioner any longer.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an office, however, as a businessman.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that you worked for the firm of O'Melveny and Myers, and of course we've seen their name in connection with various Bixby companies.
That is the connection. Mr. Henry O'Melveny, who is a fine old gentleman and I think one of the wisest men I have ever met. Sat on the board of directors of some of the Bixby companies at times and was the family lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've also spoken with Matthew Simpson, and as a partner of the firm Denial Hart Todman Simpson, that firm, Mr. Denial, early on was also the attorney for some of the Bixby companies early on, I believe.
Very true. And he was lived in Long Beach, and
right.
Mr. O'Melveny lived in Los Angeles at that time. It's somewhere down the line, my mother for a long time lived in the house on top of Bunker Hill, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old house that my grandfather lived in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry O'Melveny was a young man practicing law in that area sometime around that time. And I'm sure that there's a connection made there of some sort. Well, whatever it was, the Bixby Land Companies were the Bixby Land Company was formed, I think, in 1895 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And these things happened long before the company was ever formed. At that time, the Bixbys were, well, they were sheep herders and ranchers and whatnot, and had decided to use the modern business form of a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, there have been a number of corporations formed and used by the family. And somewhere down the line, the old associations between those early families was welded.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there were a few people a long distance apart, and they sought each other, whereas now the tendency is to get away from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew each other, were able to form judgments. Not know what they were able to do at all. But that's a fact. They lived together in a territory that was sparsely settled. They knew one another, and the old ties just remained. And I'm sure that the early acquaintance with Mr. DeNio, who is one of as I understand, from looking at the old deeds as a professional person, was very carefully, extremely well drawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In other words, he was what I call a industrious practitioner who, when he did not know something, admitted it and looked it up to the best of his ability before he wrote or spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he was respected.
Well, then, after Henry O'Melveny died, did that firm continue to represent the company?
It's been the last time it represented the company was when they had the dispute with the Department of Agriculture down in Imperial Valley about the amount of acres that a farmer could own down there.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, do you want to hear about the details of law or not? I don't think you do.
I am a layperson, so.
Well, I am too. No, but there's a Reclamation Act,
yes.
An old one, in which said you come on in here and we'll give you 160 or 640 acre stake to make a living on.
Yes.
You don't have to pay anything, or you just have to live here and do it, but. That's it. Then from then on, you're on your own. And there's a limitation on what could be owned because the early speculators would send proxies in to buy up all these things and then deed them over to some big landowner. In other words, they were a little greedier and a little keener on their greed than the ordinary man. And that situation existed in the Imperial Valley, and there was a fight which started down there maybe 15 years ago to restrict the acreage. Now, the Bixby and Alamedes Land Company together owned something maybe 10, 15,000 acres down there. And if that went through, it meant that those would have to be split up and sold in small parcels. Well, that went on to the Supreme Court of the United
mm-hmm.
States, and O'Melveny and Myers represented the organization down there.
Mm-hmm.
And at times the company has used attorneys from O'Melveny and Myers. That most of the things which arise in the Bixby Land Company at the present time are not, don't require the high specialization which that took. And they have very satisfactory attorneys that they refer matters to.
I see.